forces in Gaza calling for international investigations. Hamas has said after days of losing contact with the humanitarian team, several bodies of their members were found buried near the destroyed vehicles in Rafah, southern Gaza. The movement says this act reflects a blatant disregard for humanitarian treaties and the principles of the international law. Hamas also criticized the international community's silence as complicity. The group urged the United Nations and humanitarian organizations, including the International Committee of the Red Cross, to take urgent action to uncover the fate of thousands of missing civilians in Rafah. This came as Israel's military has confirmed firing on ambulances last Sunday in Rafah's Tal al-Sultan neighborhood, labeling them as suspicious vehicles. Israeli latest airstrikes have claimed the lives of at least 14 people and left many others injured in various locations throughout the Gaza Strip. The attacks targeted Gaza City as well as Rafah. 5 people, including women and children, were killed in Khan Yunis. Israeli occupation forces have extended evacuation orders to tens of thousands of residents within the enclave. No food or supplies have entered Gaza for over 3 weeks, making it the longest stretch without aid entering the enclave. The Israeli occupation forces resumed their offensive against Gaza on March the 18th, breaking a 2-month ceasefire. Since that time, nearly 950 individuals, mainly women and children, were killed, bringing the death toll since October 2023 to nearly 50,300. Now to give you the latest in Gaza, we are joined by Moti Abu Musabeh in Deir al-Bala. Moti, what do you have to share with us?
Yes, actually, the current situation is still grueling for the Palestinian people in the shadow of the ongoing and ceaseless Israeli strikes and attacks are still hitting various parts of Gaza Strip. I'm going to start with the latest update of Gaza's health ministry saying that at least 21 Palestinian civilians have been slaughtered since dawn hours till this moment as a result of the Israeli genocidal air strikes and the artillery shelling targeting the eastern parts of Gaza Strip. Over the past couple of hours, a brutal airstrike hit the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here, targeting an agricultural land. And the shrapnel of that attack actually landed in the yards of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here in the central area of Gaza Strip. In the meantime, another attack took place in Gaza City after the Israeli fighter drones attacked a makeshift tent of the Palestinian people in the western part of the city, killing 3 Palestinian women. And in a separate attack, the Israeli warplanes destroyed a residential building in the eastern part of Al-Shaja'iya neighborhood in Gaza City, killing 2 Palestinian civilians as well. And even when it comes to the northern part of Gaza, the Israeli warplanes continue to decimate multiple areas of that district. And the last attack, and the recent attack actually, took place against a residential building in Beit Lahia City, killing 2 Palestinian civilians. One of them was a baby. And when it comes to the southern parts of Gaza Strip, the last night was bloody for the Palestinian people there, whereas at least 12 Palestinian civilians have been slaughtered after the Israeli occupation forces intensified the artillery shelling against Abassan town in the eastern section of Khan Yunis city. And in the meantime, another massacre took place and committed against the Palestinian people in the western part of the city after the Israeli fighter drones attacked a cart, killing 5 Palestinian civilians. And needless to mention that the humanitarian situation and the current situation is still perilous and catastrophic for the Palestinian people in Rafah City in light of the ongoing military operation that targets the western parts of the city, particularly Tal al-Sultan neighborhood. We are talking about hundreds of the Palestinian people are still releasing more appeals, saying that they are still subjected to the ongoing and non-stop Israeli attacks and the gunfire and the artillery shelling, and they are no longer able to secure any kind of any food items or the drinkable water because the Israeli occupation forces are still beleaguering them. They are still preventing them from having any access to the basic humanitarian essentials and needs. And as you know, in the same context, the civil defense system stated that the fate of 14 members of the civil defense system and the ambulance crews is still unknown. And apparently they were targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. Only one dead body of those Palestinian individuals was found over the past couple of days. So we are talking about more massacres that are still committed against the Palestinian people, while the suffering of the Palestinian people is still aggravating in light of the complete closure of Gaza's crossings, whereas the Israeli occupation forces are still preventing any entry of the humanitarian supplies to the people here for more than 27 consecutive days. So you can imagine how catastrophic the situation is for the Palestinian people, particularly in these days. 2.2 million Palestinian civilians are no longer able to secure any of their basic humanitarian essentials and needs. And this is another materialization of how the Israeli occupation regime is still weaponizing those humanitarian supplies against Palestinian people and using them as another method of war against the vast majority of the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip.
Thank you for that update, Muti. That was Muti Abu Musaber reporting from Deirut Bara, central Gaza. The United States presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching new airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. Yemeni media say U.S. airstrikes hit Sa'ada, killing one person and wounding four others. The U.S. has reportedly carried out 14 strikes on the outskirts of Sa'ada city. The latest attack comes after the U.S. targeted more than 40 locations across Yemen, including in the capital Sana'a, damaging multiple residential buildings and shops. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Washington says it will use overwhelming force until the Ansarullah resistance movement stops its anti-Israel operations. Hossein al-Bukhaiti, a Yemeni activist and political commentator from Sana'a, says the Yemeni people are increasingly supporting the resistance, the country's anti-Israeli operations, in a show of solidarity with Palestine, despite the U.S. attacks on Yemen.
The United States, actually, they always cry out loud of Yemeni attack, as Trump said in the Red Sea, it cost the international economy billions of dollars, and as well the United States economy. Of course, I mean, this is the result of their involvement in the war against Gaza. And I mean, instead of sending all their battleship, instead of losing these billions of dollars in launching attack against Yemen, in trying to stop Yemeni drones attack against the United States battleship, they could just actually lift the blockade against Gaza, allow hundreds of trucks with food and fuel and water to enter Gaza, and all that will stop. Yesterday, millions of Yemenis have took up to the street in remember of the Al-Quds Day, which is the last Friday of Ramadan, and those people actually are demanding the Yemeni army to expand its attack. They are demanding Yemeni army to resume all its five stages of escalation that was before the so-called truce in Gaza was signed, which means to block the Red Sea in front of the United States commercial ship and as well UK commercial ship, and against any country that's involved in attacking Yemen, and as well to impose a blockade against not only Israeli ship, but as well against any ship, it doesn't matter what nationality, that's heading toward Israel.
Millions of Iranians have taken to the streets across the country on the International Quds Day to express solidarity with Palestinians and to condemn Israeli atrocities against them. In the capital, Tehran, streets were flooded with demonstrators. Fatima Masumi has more.
Huge crowds rallying in the streets of Tehran to mark International Quds Day. Streets flooded with demonstrators from all backgrounds, waving the flags of Gaza and the Hezbollah resistance movement, holding placards and chanting slogans to show support for Palestinians and denounce Israeli atrocities. Senior officials were also present.
Today at 4 p.m. Venezuela time, our government and people will rally to mark this occasion, condemning the Israeli regime and supporting Palestine. The atrocities occurring can only be described as genocide. Today, in my opinion, is a significant day. The huge turnout of people demonstrates that our citizens understand the situation very well. Clearly, many political dynamics have changed since last year. This turnout reflects that the Islamic Republic of Iran relies on its people.
Quds Day is commemorated on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, Afghan community in Iran also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza.
We consider Palestine our heart and soul. It is the heart of the Muslim world. Therefore, we urge all officials to take action.
I am here to condemn the Israeli attacks and the egregious atrocities they have committed in Gaza.
The people who participated in the rallies say their presence is a response to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution's call.
I am here in response to our leader's call to come out and send a strong message to the world.
As the son of a martyr, I am here because our leader stated that this year's rallies are even more significant. This huge turnout shows that the resistance is stronger than ever.
As our beloved Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah once said, we will never abandon Palestine. We are the Shia of Ali ibn Abi Talib, and we will never abandon Palestine, nor the people of Palestine.
The huge turnout in Iran is seen not only as a sign of unity and strength of the Iranian nation, but their steadfast support for the Palestinian resistance.
Iranians have once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and strongly condemned their recent renewed Israeli bloodshed, expressing full support for the Palestinian cause. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
In Yarmouk camp, protesters gathered on the last Friday of Ramadan, chanting against the Israeli occupation and in support of Gaza's resilience. The demonstration reflected the deep anger over the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Protesters reaffirmed their solidarity with the Palestinian resistance.
We have taken to the streets to reject surrender and any attempt to crush Palestinian resistance. Our support is unwavering until victory and the full liberation of Palestine. To our people in Gaza, we stand with you, your sacrifices, and your resistance.
Syrians and Palestinians believe the Palestinian cause unites the Arab and Islamic world, bringing together all who stand for justice and resistance.
One day, we will stand on the soil of Palestine. Arabs and Muslims may have their differences, but Al-Quds unites us all. Palestine is a cause of truth and justice, and all free people of the world support it.
Meanwhile, in Umayyad Square, demonstrators condemned Israeli violations in Syria and Palestine, denouncing the occupation's repeated attacks on southern Syria, particularly the recent Qayyim massacre.
This demonstration is a message of solidarity with our people in southern Syria, especially after the massacre in Qayyim. Israeli attacks on Syria, Lebanon, and Palestine must stop.
Protesters emphasized their rejection of the Israeli occupation and threats. They urged the international community to take a firm stance against Israel's violations of Syrian sovereignty.
Our message to the Israeli enemy is clear. We will resist, just as the heroes of Qayyim have proven. And to the international community, you have turned a blind eye to our suffering, and now, you ignore the threats against innocent people. At the very least, stop enabling Israel's crimes.
Syrians and Palestinians send a clear message. Resistance will not be broken. As Israel escalates its attacks, the people remain steadfast, standing together for Gaza, for Dara, and for the liberation of all occupied lands. Ali Muhammad, Damascus.
The death toll from the Nigerian forces attack on Quds Day protesters in Abuja has risen to 19, with dozens more injured and nearly 200 arrested. Nigerian soldiers opened fire on unarmed protesters just minutes after the rally began. Danjuma Abdullahi reports from Abuja.
The Quds Day rally in Abuja began immediately after Friday prayers as hundreds of demonstrators took to the streets in solidarity with the Palestinian people, particularly those in Gaza who endure severe oppression under the Israeli regime. Less than 10 minutes into the march, Nigerian military forces arrived and launched an assault on the protesters. The intensity of the gunfire disrupted recordings, forcing our camera crew to take cover.
A lot of people have been butchered by these soldiers. I saw so many people on the floor, blood flowing as if we're in Gaza. There is no difference between what happens today. There is no difference between this guard brigade, this so-called army, Nigerian army, and that the IDF of the Israelis. Shooting not on air, shooting on the crowd, using even machine gun, ammo tank, on innocent, unarmed people, majorly female and children.
At the time of filing this report, the Islamic movement was still working to compile a list of those killed. They stated that the task remains difficult as soldiers have been removing the bodies of the martyrs and taking them away. Members of the Islamic movement affirmed their commitment to observing International Quds Day on the last Friday of every Ramadan. They vowed to continue holding protest rallies in solidarity with the Palestinian people who remain under oppression by the Israeli regime. They have this message to the Nigerian authorities.
The presidency cannot exempt itself from this brutality because it is guard brigade that opened fire on peaceful protesters. And the Guard Brigade are only answerable to Mr. President. The President, Bola Ahmed Tinubu, should come out and tell the whole world what happens, what happens, why did you decide to kill people that are showing solidarity with the Palestinians?
Today's attack on the Kuds Day peaceful procession in Nigeria is not the first time. Since 2015, security forces in various Nigerian cities, including Abuja, the capital city, have always attacked the Kuds Day procession, killing and injuring many demonstrators. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
Turning to the Turkish city of Istanbul, where hundreds of thousands have once again gathered at the call of the main opposition to demand the release of Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu. The arrest of President Erdogan's chief political rival has sparked the largest wave of street protests in over a decade. Nationwide demonstrations continue despite government crackdowns, including mass arrests and violent police interventions. Nearly 2,000 protesters, among them at least 10 journalists, have been arrested. İmamoğlu was jailed on corruption charges, widely seen as politically motivated. He was set to stand as the main opposition candidate in Turkey's 2028 presidential election. His detention has drawn sharp international condemnation, with critics calling it a blatant move to stifle dissent. The death toll from the massive earthquakes that hit Myanmar and Thailand has crossed 1,000 as rescuers continue to dig through the rubble to search for survivors. The 7.7 magnitude earthquake struck central Myanmar midday on Friday, followed minutes later by a 6.7 magnitude aftershock. Over 1,000 people were killed and more than 2,300 injured in the second biggest city, Mandalay, which is believed to be the worst affected. The toll is expected to rise significantly. In the Thai capital, 10 people were confirmed killed as a skyscraper under construction collapsed in seconds by force of the shaking. Scores of workers are still unaccounted for at the building with rescue operations underway. India, France, and the European Union have offered to provide assistance to Myanmar after the ruling military general issued a plea for international assistance. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. We'll see you soon. Take care and bye-bye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
Five centuries of Western domination of the world is coming to an end. This will be the century of Asia, Eurasia, and Africa. India should strategize accordingly. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "To be an enemy of America can be dangerous, but to be a friend is fatal." These are purportedly the words of Henry Kissinger, the notorious war criminal and Nobel Peace Prize winner who greatly influenced American foreign policy. India must not forget this dark side of the American establishment, even though Joe Biden claimed that U.S.-India relations are the most consequential of this century, and Donald Trump has repeatedly met with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, calling him a great leader. The U.S. pivot to India is undergirded by three American interests: containment of China, cheap labor, and a vast consumer market. The United States has no real allies, only narcissistic and imperialist interests. Modi was one of the few foreign leaders invited to the White House during the first month of Trump's new administration. Overall, Indians also have very positive opinions about Trump and the United States in general. There are many reasons why the United States enjoys significant soft power in India: immigration, tech jobs, the success of Indian Americans, the popularity of the English language, Western funding of Indian think tanks, American investors in Indian corporate media, tensions with China, and so on. However, India, a rising global power, must be careful not to turn into the Ukraine of Asia, an expendable geopolitical pawn of the United States Empire. Let us be blunt. The U.S. wants to control every aspect of India. A few months ago, the U.S. ambassador to India told an Indian audience that there is no such thing as a strategic autonomy. Ominously, this warning came just before the U.S. staged the color revolution in Bangladesh and overthrew Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina Wajid, who was not perfect but had done a commendable job in reviving the economy. The reason was simple. PM Hasina refused to allow a U.S. military base in her country. Similarly, any objective geopolitical analyst could see how the U.S. staged coups in Pakistan and Sri Lanka in the past few days. Incarcerated Prime Minister Imran Khan was ousted by a soft coup after blatant U.S. pressure. His party was banned and he was sent to prison. How about that for American-style freedom and democracy? His crime was to be too friendly to Russia. As for Sri Lanka, the party in power was deemed to be too pro-China. Of course, the United States could not allow such independence. History also reveals that the United States was never a true ally of India. While the Indian foreign policy establishment is wary of China's influence in India's neighborhood, there is almost no outcry about American meddling in India's sphere of influence. Indians are too forgiving about the fact that in 1966, the US CIA luckily assassinated Indian Prime Minister Lal Bahadur Shastri and the top nuclear scientist Homi Bhabha. All through the Cold War, the United States sabotaged India as a punishment for the latter's non-alignment philosophy and friendly relations with the USSR. The United States also encouraged India to start a war with China over Tibet. But then President JFK refused to provide any military assistance at this critical moment. Later, when Bangladesh sought independence, the United States sent warships to the Bay of Bengal to threaten India, which was able to repel the Americans only with the help of the Soviet Union. Fast forward to today, India has not really benefited from its close relations with America. When the Cold War ended, American corporations salivated over China and India to be exploited for cheap labor in manufacturing and services, respectively. However, the difference in these two countries could not be starker. While China focused on mastering technologies and creating indigenous champions, Indian elites were content with using American products. The result could be seen in Chinese tech giants such as Huawei, BYD, ByteDance, and 135 other companies in the Fortune 500 list, compared to just 9 from India. In artificial intelligence, the most disruptive technology of this century, China owns 60% of the patents, while India accounts for less than 1%. In numerous other industries, including electric cars, solar panels, batteries, smartphones, semiconductors, robotics, cloud computing, biotech, space travel, fighter jets, warships, etc., China has far surpassed India. Why has India fallen behind? Because we follow the American economic model of financialized capitalism and we feel safe with dependency on the American dollar, American technology, American media, American medicine, American investment, and so on. India also allows its foreign policy to be dictated by the United States more than necessary. For example, we could be buying cheap oil and gas from Iran and we could have started the Chabahar port project a long time ago. However, India is too differential towards U.S. sanctions. Similarly, India joining the Quad and other Indo-Pacific agreements to contain China or refusing to join the Belt and Road Initiative only promotes the U.S. geopolitical machinations of divide and rule. Right now, the U.S. benefits from India in multiple ways, relatively inexpensive Indian labor in the software industry, ultra-cheap manufacturing labor for companies like Apple, a giant consumer market of growing middle class, Indian startups being open to American investors, Indian government's purchase of U.S. weapons, and India being a potential geopolitical tool to contain China diplomatically, economically, and militarily. However, American soft power will not last long in India. First, the United States will soon restrict immigration from India, especially for H-1B tech workers. The racist American alt-right has already started demonizing Indians. Second, the United States will start containing India as the latter continues to grow and become more independent. The United States may allow Indians to become CEOs of Google and Microsoft, but the U.S. will not tolerate Indian companies that compete with Google and Microsoft. The U.S. maintains its global hegemony not because of equal partners, but through a network of vassals. Even Europeans are finally waking up from their hypernotic slumber. The new German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, said that Europe must work towards independence from the United States. Looking at the big picture, we are witnessing the cycle of history in which another empire is on the verge of collapse. However, unlike the last few centuries, the United States will not be replaced by another empire. Instead, a multipolar world is emerging to democratize geopolitics and geoeconomy. Organizations like BRICS will provide a new paradigm of cooperation and development for the Global South nations. Also gone will be the extraordinary privilege of the U.S. dollar, which underpins American tyranny of sanctions and endless wars. 5 centuries of Western domination of the world is coming to an end. This will be the century of Asia, Eurasia, and Africa. India should strategize accordingly.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. To look back at what this month had for us, all of you have heard of Sahifa Sajjadiyah, Dua number 45. I want to go through some of the highlights where the Imam is reminding us what this month was all about. And it's a good idea to take a look at that if you would like, inshallah. A few of the things. It says, for example, first of all, this month was the month chosen and preferred over all other months because of the fact that the Quran was sent down in it. So that's special about it. Because fasting was made wajib in it. Prayer was encouraged in it. Laylatul Qadr gave it extra credibility this night. We're happy because we went through all of this. If I am greeting you, if I'm congratulating you, you're congratulating me. Not that, alhamdulillah, it's over. Although it was tough. It was tough. And it's always tough. But it's because of these things that a person is happy. It is a month in which the wishes are close to being fulfilled. By doing these things in this extra month, we were made subject to your special mercy, O Allah. Imam Sajjad is speaking to Allah. We got special VIP access, O Allah, to you. That's what makes this night so special, this month so special. And this an Eid for us. A month in which good deeds are spread out across it. A month in which the hearts were softened. A month in which sins reached a minimum. A month that helped us in our struggle with shaitan. So, in this month, if anything bad happens, shows that we can't blame each other shaitan all the time. Yes? Sometimes the problem is from within. Shaitan is locked up so that Allah lets us fight a little freely with ourselves a little bit more. Struggle against ourselves a little more. A month that made it easy for us to tread the paths of the righteous ones and of righteousness. A month in which the number of those saved from the hellfire is very high. Remember I said, جُنَّةٌ مِنَ النَّارِ. It's a shield from the hellfire. And so on and so forth. A month of peace from every angle and so on and so forth. Of course, even in Islamic countries, they say the crime rates drop dramatically in the month of Ramadan. And so on.
Ramadan, Ramadan.
The point I'm trying to make, though, is this, that it was just yesterday that we started as if when you're in the middle of it and the thick of it, you think to yourself, when is this going to, you know, slowly, you know, end, inshallah. But when it ends, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. It doesn't seem like it was actually that long of a thing. And look, brothers and sisters, this, I want to take inspiration from this feeling that we usually get every year after the month of Ramadan is over, to the point some people even weep. With the departure of the holy month. I want to take inspiration from this and remind us of something. It passes that quick when it's over. This is the quality of this life, brothers and sisters. Everything about this life is about passing. It's about being temporal, not being permanent. Okay? The Quran, what does it say? When it says, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu kutiba alaykum as-siyam. Siyam and fasting has been made incumbent upon you. The same way it was made incumbent upon others. You're thinking to yourself, oh my God, fasting. Like, can we have some water at least? The answer will be no. And you're thinking to yourself, this is a hard. But then the Quran continues. The verse after, it says, listen, it's wajib on you. You might be worried, it's not easy. Ayyaman ma'dudat. It's only a few days. 30 days is only a few days. It reminds me of what I tell kids all the time, including my own, that look, Salat might be hard for you, But how many minutes do we have in a day? 1,440. Allah asks for 30 minutes max. If you're professional, 15 minutes a day. All right? 15 to 30 minutes a day, maybe for your five salats. Okay? That's what he's asking for. Compared to 1440, it's almost nothing. Really. But look at what shaitan does with us and plays with us, and our own nafs and laziness gets the best of us, that it's just the hardest thing for us. Yeah? All right. It's coming back to the fast now. Kutiba alaykum as-siyam. Yeah, but 30 days out of 365, or 350, whatever it is, the lunar calendar. Yeah? To the point that the Quran mentions this in the verse, that it is a little bit. Ayyaman ma'dudat. It's only a few days. But this, brothers and sisters, is the quality of this life. You will not find anything perpetual in this life, long-lasting in this life. And so, I want to say, and by the way, as the verses go on, it says, if you're sick, ill, you can't fast, fine. فَعِدَّةٌ مِنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ. A few other days somewhere else, you'll make it up. Yeah, Allah doesn't let us off the hook, first of all. But second of all, makes the point again. عِدَّةٌ مِنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ. A few other days, you know, you'll make up those fasts. Oh, it's 30 days a year, yeah. First of all, look at what you're getting in return. Plus, 30 versus 360 is not that much. Yes, 1/12 of the year. But this is the quality of this life. Everything ends. And so just like the Quran says, these fasts are a few days. Well, I want to remind all of us, and when it passes, we're like, oh, that was quick. Well, guess what? This life is like this. All in all, it's like this. Everything about this life, when it ends, we're like, whoa, when did it begin for it to end? When we're in it, we think, wow, this is it. When I'm in my 20s, 30s, 40s, I'm at the prime of my life. Yeah? And I don't think it's going to end. And I look back, I'm like, wow, I was 20 years old before. Now I'm this much. And I'm 60, I'm looking back, I'm like, wow, 40 was not bad either, actually. And before you know it, it's over, to the point that the Quran says when they pass away, or on Yawm al-Qiyamah, when they're asked, how long were you in the dunya? Yawman, ba'da yawm, a day, maybe half a day. And that's what this life is all about, brothers and sisters. And that's how the month of Ramadan also reminds us of this Yawm al-Qiyamah. If the month of Ramadan is ayyaman ma'dudat, this life is ayyaman ma'dudat. We take from it what we can, and it's time to move on. That's one point I also wanted to make. And it echoes what Imam Ali says also that I really love. It's three words. I mention this hadith all the time. When I say it's the quality of this life, okay? Some of you have heard this from me before. It's a reminder. It's a quality of this life that it's going to, everything ends. The Imam, he points out something very nicely. He says, look, kullu atin qareeb. Kullu atin qareebun. Anything that is somewhere far away but is going to eventually arrive is actually close. Think about that. Anything that is going to eventually, if you live here for a million years even, Prophet Nuh, when it was time to go, he said, whoa, that was quick. Prophet Nuh, you lived for like over 1,000 years. He says, oh, that was quick when it's time to go. Kullu atin, this is what the life is all about.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran. I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan, ya Habib. Ramadan, Ramadan, laytaka. ليتك دوما قريب.
what you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Let's listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of the month of Allah. We're going to be talking about famous reciters of the Quran and the world of Islam. Today, we'll be talking about Brother Muhammad Javad Hosseini, Sayyid Muhammad Javad Hosseini. He is a very famous reciter right now, not only in Iran, but in the whole world. And you can probably watch his videos on YouTube. If you search Muhammad Javad Hosseini, you'll notice that there are a lot of videos of him on the internet and on YouTube. This reciter was born in 1983 in a city close to Mashhad, where the shrine of Imam Ridha is located. He started learning Quran at the age of 11, and his teacher was his brother, Mustafa Hosseini. He started learning the Quran at an early age when he was 11 years old, and his teacher was his brother, Sayyid Hassan Hosseini. Later, in order to learn the other rules of recitation, such as tajweed, maqamat, and waqf wal-ibtida, he became the student of great masters of Quran, such as Mustafa Javidi and Mr. Sadat Fatemi. Brother Sayyid Muhammad Javad Hosseini participated in the Quran competition held in Iran in the year 2009, and he placed first. He won the competition. And this was the very first time that he participated in an international competition. This recitation that we're about to listen to is a recitation which was performed in Madinatul Sadr of Baghdad, which is a district in the city of Baghdad in Iraq. And it's interesting that in this recitation, one of the people in the audience asked Brother Muhammad Javad Hosseini to recite the verses 89 to 90 of Suratul Anbiya in Maqam Kurd. He smiled, and then he used Maqam Kurd in this recitation that we're about to listen to. And it's very interesting that someone from the audience requests the reciter to use such and such Maqam. And we see this in the recitation performed by Brother Muhammad Javad Hosseini. He uses Maqam Kurd in the recitation that we're about to listen to right now, which is Suratul Anbiya, verses 89 to 90 by Sayyid Muhammad Javad Hosseini. Let's enjoy this recitation.
وَزَكَرِيَّا إِذْ نَادَى
And mention Zechariah when he called to his Lord, "My Lord, do not leave me alone with no heir, while you are the best of inheritors." So we responded to him, and we gave to him John, and amended for him his wife. Indeed, they used to hasten to good deeds and supplicate us in hope and fear, and they were to us humbly submissive.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. The Quran is the overall framework of individual and social life, the shape of social and individual life. A collection which the book contains it, clarifies it, and is an expression of it. And to teach them the book and the wisdom. Surah 62, verse 2. What is wisdom? It's knowledge and understanding of the truths of the universe. Something that allows people to grasp the truths of the universe. The recitation of the book teaches us these things. To recite to them, the Prophet, peace be upon him and his holy progeny, recites the Quran to the people in order to accomplish the following things. Purification, teaching the book and teaching wisdom.
Subhanallah, alhamdulillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, alhamdulillah, wa la
What do you do? You who are the reciters are doing the same work as the Prophet. You also recite. The act of recitation is a prophetic task. The recitation of the Quran is of such great importance that you can change Quranic concepts into ideas that are accepted by the general public. There are thousands of important titles and headings in the Quran. For example, consider this verse, so that people may maintain justice. Surah 57, verse 25. Adopt a policy excusing the faults of people. Surah 7, verse 199. And remember Allah with frequent remembrance. Surah 33, verse 41. All of these are different titles and headings. One of the duties and functions of your recitation, if done correctly, is to change these concepts into certainties accepted by society's thinking. It should become an established matter in society that one must maintain justice and that one must remember God. Remember Allah with frequent remembrance. That one must forgive his or her brothers and sisters. Adopt a policy of excusing the faults of people, that one must fight in the way of Allah, and the other concepts that exist in the Quran. This isn't an overstatement. There are thousands of titles, topics, and headings in the Quran that can become a part of the common intellectual knowledge of the general populace. What makes this possible? Good recitation. That's when the people's Quranic knowledge will increase and they will think in the way that the Quran has taught.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me. Gave me hope, oh Allah, I want to
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity and from the changes of time.